Welcome to Moo!
Welcome to Moo!
We hadn't really rehearsed it. I was trying to do a V and you do a banter.
We just talk about cows.
Why have you just looked at me blankly?
Did you memorise choreography?
Yeehaw! Because I thought it was...
Oh, you can do that.
Woo!
It's a cowboy special. That's right. We're going to do just westerns.
I don't think there's anything remotely cowboy related. Is there even a horse in any of the films?
Scott Pilgrim.
Versus the Wild.
The Wild. Still no horses.
And Knight and Day.
With the horse and
salt. Salt, because cowboys love salt on their burgers.
Salt and tequila,
Didn't you have like salted beef to preserve it?
Jerky.
You know, fridges. No, I mean, there's no use for name calling.
Anyway. Welcome to episode 75, three quarters of the way to the big 1-0.
Oh, yes. Big 1-0.
Yes.
Yeah, we're back
from
Edinburgh.
Extended break over the summer. I hope you had a lovely summer. And the sun is still shining.
Yes.
I don't. What do you mean?
Fun.
How long have you known me? You know that I hate the heat and all sorts of human happiness.
Okay.
Which is why you run away from the heat into cinemas to see films.
Well, exactly.
Hence the podcast.
Well, very true. Yes. Yeah, so I hope you had a good summer time. We were up in Edinburgh.
We were.
It was good.
Seeing shows and things.
Exactly. And
doing
also
shows
and also
and
two
doing
films.
Shows.
Well, yeah, doing shows in Paul's case and just seeing stuff in my case.
Yeah, it's good.
It we've recovered. We've now woken up.
Exactly. We've gone back. We're now hung under for the first time in a month. So that's good. And
get some cream for that.
You can, can't you? I'm wearing
special chafing pants.
And incidentally, I've been plotting my world tour of the Edinburgh show.
Oh, really?
Fantastic.
I've been contacting art centres and theatres around to the UK. So if anyone listening, if you've got a place near you that would welcome stand up comedy for an hour or so, then contact them and get them to book me, and I'll come along. Whatever it is on the planet, as long as they pay me airfare and a hotel, I'll come. So, wherever you're listening, I know we've got people in Singapore, Australia, America. Just, start collecting the pennies. And I'd like a free holiday, please. that's the plan.
Fair enough. Although, I don't think we've name-checked ourselves. No, who to book you.
I'm Paul Carenza.
I'm John Sands.
And I'm Jennifer Masters.
You could book any one of us three.
Well, that's
true.
If you want stand-up comedy, I'd recommend Paul rather than either of us.
Yeah.
Because it's not really our speciality.
Exactly. Yeah. But the others can just... I'm sure you can do things, can't you?
I can do things,
I could stand on stage and look awkward for an hour.
There you go.
What a show. I could make everyone feel increasingly uncomfortable. As I slowly just burst into tears.
There were worse shows than that at the Edinburgh Festival.
And I think I saw that show.
There's one show, which they did for the second time this year, which is called... It's called something like a young man dressed as a gorilla, dressed as an old man, who sits on a chair for an hour and then leaves.
Right.
And it does exactly what it says on the tin.
No dialogue.
There's
or anything.
No words. He just walks on in a gorilla outfit, sits there in a rocking chair, dressed as an old man for an hour, and then leaves.
Does he rock?
There's some rocking. But the nice thing is that whatever slight thing happens, like if he uncrosses and recrosses his legs, the audience just go wild. Like, yeah, he's doing that thing.
How big an audience does he get?
It sells out.
Really?
Because people would just go, well, that can't be what it says. And they go along. But what's amazing, people are now reviewing it as proper art.
I was going to say.
Because they're saying that the audience kind of create the show, because then people just start heckling, but he does nothing because he just sits there and rocks.
Just sits there and rocks.
He rocks out. Who knows? But you know, the slightest thing, if he coughs, or if the rocking chair rocks a bit more, people go, ooh. It's just like they're creating their own entertainment.
I now actually kind of want to see that.
Sounds like quite a good bit of physical theatre.
I've gutted I missed it.
Yeah. Oh, next time.
But anyway, there you are.
But anyway, but this is not about Edinburgh. This was Edinburgh banter.
We must plough on because we have many
films.
Yeah,
we do. We've got a lot of films. So we're going to do two podcasts.
Yeah, we've got a couple of films. Three this week. We'll do three the next week or next fortnight, whenever we put it out.
I think next fortnight, yes.
So, in the meantime, should we get on with Scott Pilgrim?
I think we should.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Straight into Scott Pilgrim, which I think we've all seen.
We have.
Yes. Paul and I got special preview tickets up in Edinburgh.
But it's
because we visited a website that anyone else could have visited.
Well, true.
But still.
And that kind of novelty's worn off now that it's out to the main public
of
weeks.
Yeah, that's true.
But we saw
it was fun at the time.
Well, I saw the first half of it and then for my show.
You've seen the whole thing.
I saw the rest of it a week ago.
Oh, okay.
So that's taking your art seriously. So if anyone went to Paul's show that night and wondered why he just turned up slightly late out of breath, that's why. Because you've been at the cinema.
Yeah.
That's how much your entertainment matters to
Pretty much.
But yeah, this is directed by Edgar Wright of Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead and Spaced fame.
It's probably his most spacedy of these films, I would imagine.
I think so, yeah.
Because it's kind of video game geekery.
Yeah, because it doesn't have its own... I mean, it does have its own plot, but whereas Hot Fuzz was sort of police action thing and Shaun of the Dead was zombie thing, and this is more like space, it's going to be dude does whatever he wants with his.
Yeah, and it's kind of, it's a real world plot in a way, in that you've just got a bloke living in a place,
yes,
but then really heightened via video game.
Yeah, and then stuff. Utterly bonkers.
Utterly bonkers.
Utterly bonkers.
Yes.
But narrowly bonkers, only in a very specific way.
Oh yeah, only visually bonkers.
Yeah.
And the fact that everyone... Yeah, I mean, we should explain the plot.
Wise, actually,
yeah,
because the plot
say...
is not real world either, actually, is it? Really?
No, but no. It could be, as it, because a lot of people seem to be half not very interested in seeing it. I can't think, we got one of the comments from someone who, I can't quite remember, basically saying that Scott Pilgrim just didn't quite sell them, but I think it'll be elsewhere or not on that screen, but I'll come to it later on. And I think they've had a marketing issue with it. I think they tried to really market it a lot as a big budget film, and it wasn't. It's not a particularly. I mean, it feels like a big budget film. Mm. I think it was, but it's not a very mainstream film.
The trouble is, Edgar Wright's first film where he's got no Brits in the cast.
Yes,
although I believe the first of the X's is British, but actually auditioned pretending he wasn't British.
Oh right,
because he knew that would not get him. No. Get him in. Mm. So it's his first film of going, yes, we're going to go completely American/Canadian.
Yes, and also
Canadian.
No Simon Pegg,
no
or
Simon
Nick
Pegg,
Frost.
No Nick Frost. So he's kind of out there on his own, but he has not done well in America.
Which, but despite surprised. Getting very good reviews though, it's been generally very well reviewed, and I loved it.
I
thought it was all right. I didn't. Maybe it's because you said that it was so good that I was expecting really wonderful things, and I came out going, oh, "All right." I mean, yeah, it was fun, but like I say, it was. I thought it was a bit limited. I suppose. I don't know.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought it was visually. Because I mean, because the marketing doesn't do a brilliant job of getting the idea across, which is essentially Scott Pilgrim wants to date a girl who has 7 evil exes who he has to defeat. And it turns out those fights are huge, over-the-top comic book, cartoon-style battles, which end up when he defeats them into them disappearing into a shower of coins.
And it's
utterly ridiculous. I mean, if you have seen the trailer, you'll see at one point Chris Evans hurling him into a building, and he just sort of gets up and walks away because that's how the world works. But I really liked that. The fact that everyone only, I think, the first fight, when his sister looks on in shock. And it's all going, oh, is this really happening? Is everyone else, this is going on, right? And then that's the only surprise. And every time after that, he's getting hurled through walls or people are, you know, having superpowers. And no one bats an eyelid and just gets on with it.
Yeah, I heard an interview with Edgar Wright and the other writers. Other co-writer and the comic book creator, because it is based on a comic book, of course. And they said that they deliberately, in pretty much all the fights, the people watching the fights, and the sister, the friends, there's his ex-girlfriend, Knives, and his friends, he's got his hilarious gay flatmate.
He's the best.
Kieran Culkin.
Very good.
Brilliant.
And he's actually got, I mean, a lot of these films would have like one best friend in it, but he's got about sort of 8 around him, which is quite nice. He's got sort of, the band he's with and the ex and that sort of thing. And but deliberately, during all the fights, they've all kind of got something else on their minds. So, like, during one of the fights, his ex-girlfriend, Knives, just sort of collapses and faints and comes around as the fight finishes. The girl is what's her name? Ron
Flowers.
Who's the girl?
Ramona.
Ramona. That's Ramona. During one of the fights, is actually sort of looking down and looking down at one of her other exes. Oh God, I can't believe my ex is showing off like this. So they're all kind of not looking at the fact that he's just been flung into a tower and that the ex then vanishes into a pile of coins. No one kind of acknowledges that.
Well, they did at one point. I think his ex when he fights Brandon Routh. But I think he's very good, despite because he's quite wooden, but was good in that part. But then after that battle, she says, oh, you headbutted my boyfriend so hard he burst.
Oh, that's true. So
it does. So
they do sort of acknowledge it.
And then later on, it's completely normal, or they just don't care.
And later on, the band pick up some coins because they're
shoveling them in.
Yeah, it's not shoving the pocket. And the Kieran Culkin at one point just walks past going, oh, when you're done with fighting, we'll getting a coffee next door.
Yeah,
they're all very like nonchalant about it.
Yeah.
Oh, you just do your fighty exy thing.
This is partly why it's, I don't know, it kind of troubled me, because I haven't really thought about it too much, but now that I'm being challenged, the fact that there are some real moments of sort of realism, of effective, of how you'd actually feel in a situation, and then everyone's sort of ignoring the fact that he's just murdered 7 people.
Well, there is that.
It occurred to me, it's a little bit like in Anchorman, where they have the scene, the sort of fight scene between all the network people, when people, come in on horses and start beheading them.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, they're just chatting and saying, oh, but you did kill someone with a trident, so the police will probably want to talk to you. And it was kind of like that, except without that acknowledgement of anything that's happened. Which doesn't bother me, because that's just what the film's about. But I can see why it'll throw people off slightly.
Well, they never say kill, really. They always say...
It's always defeat.
I must fight. And then she goes, oh no, defeat, yes, by seven evil exes. Mm. And you can interpret defeat as dead, or as make them surrender, or as make them vanish into a pile of coins.
Yeah.
It could be any one of those things in a real world existence. So, it's very silly, very, very heightened. I came away thinking... I found this. I think it's actually the first film I saw since Inception.
Oh right.
And I suddenly realised, I've seen, you know, five or six films in the last week or two, and I've realised that my film watching career now sort of almost feels like before Inception and after Inception. That now things have changed. So that's the landmark. That's the benchmark now. And so every film I've watched, even if I enjoyed it, like I enjoyed Scott Pilgrim, I thought, I'm really enjoying this. Mm. It's not Inception, but I'm really enjoying it. And I think...
That's pretty cool.
So, which is good. But I think I came away from Inception thinking, wow, that was a really intelligent thriller. I really wish that they made lots more films like that.
Mm.
And Scott Pilgrim, I really enjoyed, but I was sort of glad that there's only one film like that at the minute. And maybe in a few years, another would be quite nice.
But I think it's so unique and intense to hear it over the top. I think if anyone tried to copy that style, it really wouldn't work.
I'm sure there will be a lot of people trying. Yeah.
Well, probably. I mean, except having said that, because it hasn't done well at the box office, maybe not.
Well.
But then I think people are hoping, partly overseas box office may do better, and also DVD, because I think Kick-Ass is either doing well or people expect it'll do well on DVD and didn't do particularly well at the box office.
Well, it reminds me of it is quite similar to Kick-Ass.
It's comic book based.
And it's the sort of thing, comic book film, they couldn't really have done, you know, the sort of the comic book genre. The superhero, you know, later, I think in the next episode, we'll talk about The Expendables, which is the revival of the 80s and sort of 90s style action hero. But then, sort of in the last 10, 15 years, it's actually not the real human action hero, it's the superhero we'll be after with the comic book films.
Mm.
And so Scott Pilgrim and Kick-Ass seem to be, I don't know whether they're at the tail end of the superhero genre or whether it's got more legs yet, but they're kind of, you kind of need to have seen the superhero films originally in the first place to kind of get what they're lampooning here. And
and also it's kind of moving it into more normal people with superpowers rather than superheroes, so it's probably the next stage, but I don't see where else
they couldn't really have done these films before Spider-Man
you need abstract superheroes first, then you get kind of human superheroes, and then we'll move on to
I think it's more about this sort of arcade generation though, isn't it? And this is what it's about, this film is being aware of all the platform games and, you know, console games. That's what it is. It's not even actually, it didn't seem too movie to me.
No,
the references were so niche, I suppose, that it was unmistakably...
Well, so I think if someone had no idea how games worked, I mean, things like when you're defeating someone and get a pile of coins and also points racking up.
Yeah.
I think anyone who was... everyone must have some degree of computer game awareness, at least how they work. But I think if you had no interest at all in that sort of thing, it will be very hard to relate to.
Yeah. I think that's fair enough.
Mm. But I think the thing that... Partly, it's very funny, which works for me a lot. And also, I think just the visual creativity side of it, I really like. And partly that's just Edgar Wright's directing, which I've always had a thing for.
Yeah.
But it's just the fact that once you disconnect yourself from reality, and you think, right, we're going to have these Battle of the Bands, and it's going to be two giant snakes and a donkey and King Kong.
Oh, dragons.
What are you, a zoologist? once you set yourself free from that, I think, right, I just want this to happen, so it's going to happen. Then I really like that sort of thing in films, and just that level of visual flair.
Absolutely.
And, but like you say, I think if every film, I say, right, let's all do that, then it would be far too much.
And it has been dividing people a bit. We've had some, Def Steve, who is on Twitter.
Oh, yes.
We are on Twitter, Movie Banter, you'll find us on Twitter. Def Steve, who is a comedian who I happened to gig with last weekend, and he told me, in no uncertain terms, what he thought of Scott Pilgrim at that gig, and that he went to see it that afternoon, and he walked out halfway through.
Oh, really?
He couldn't take it, which is why his review simply says, my limit was XXX on Scott Pilgrim, XXXXXX was asking too much.
Fair
so
enough.
After the third X, he just thought, are there going to be four more fights a bit like this? In which case, and this is kind of the problem with setting yourself up, saying there's going to be seven evil X's.
Yeah.
Which means that each of the first six fights, whatever, you kind of know that he's going to win.
Well, yes.
You know that there's no real peril, and that the next one's going to be a bit like the previous one, with a slight twist.
Yeah, slightly different.
So, you know, it is that sort of thing that you just kind of know where you're going.
Well, yes. Apparently also there's one slight limitation of the film, because it's based on a series of comic books. I think there may even be seven comic books, or possibly six. which cover each X or more of the story. And because it's all been compressed into one film, apparently the comics are quite good as you expand on the relationships a bit more.
Yeah.
And whereas the film is pretty much is very simplistic in terms of, I really like this girl. But you don't really find out why, he just does.
No.
And then she just says, right, I kind of like you. Why? Or I just are. And then fight. And that's it. So it's very simple on that level. But I don't think that undermines the film. But no. I can see why it wouldn't necessarily... A lot of people might have that issue with this. And they're just finding it a little bit limited.
That's a good point, actually. Ramona just sort of go, all right, then.
Well, she seems quite disinterested. Mm. And then suddenly it turns out, oh, you're fighting because you are dating. And she sort of shrugs.
Are we dating?
Which I think is partly... It's not quite satirising, but it's referencing, you know, young people or some young people attitudes to relationships or things.
Yeah.
But it's quite quickly paced.
Well, we're going to tie us into Desert Island Flicks, aren't we, this week?
Yes.
Best breakup film.
Yes. Or so, film like X's or...
So you may chew on that for the next 15 to 20 minutes while we review other films.
Yes. We also had a Review to a Kill just saying, Scott Pilgrim is the ultimate in geekery and I loved it, even if I felt slightly dirty. Every time I heard the Legends of Zelda theme.
Oh, yes.
Now, the trouble is, I don't actually know the Legends of Zelda theme, so I wouldn't have recognised it if I'd seen it.
But there were lots of bits you suddenly go, oh, that's the sound that Sonic makes when he gets a gold coin,
yeah.
Isn't
oh,
it?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Things like that. So there were quite a lot of those in there. Email from Blair as well, who said, not entirely sure how Scott suddenly had incredible fighting skills, seemingly out of nowhere, but then to criticise the film for a lack of realism perhaps misses the whole point of it. Mm. The fact that it had a smaller opening weekend in the US than Vampire Suck.
Yeah, that is...
Bit of a travesty. That's just wrong. Vampire Suck being the new
vampire epic movie. Date movie.
Sports movie. Bad movie.
Duh. Waste of
shame, time. But hopefully its DVD sales will be impressive. I know I'll certainly be eager to pick up a copy, as I now find myself in love with this movie. Or more accurately, I'm in lesbians with this movie. You'll get that if you've seen the film.
Yes, if you haven't, then that will make no sense whatsoever.
Blair also points out there's a nice little website which we'll link to on moviebanter.co.uk.
Oh, yes.
Where you will find this podcast and other things. And, it's the basically the spoof posters for the Lucas Lee films, which is the movie star in the film.
Yeah, which you only see very briefly, but they all look like they could be real films. Yeah. They're all the right colouring and the right stylings, and with taglines like, "Kiss me, I'm dying." And
yes.
I think it's someone like Action Doctor is along the lines of he'll save your life and then he'll kill you.
Yeah,
but yes, we'll link to them all so you can see them.
Speaking of bad action films, that's almost the perfect link into
Night and Day. Yeah,
this was my
importance of double bill. We had went to see Night and Day and then Scott Pilgrim, and that actually in part that might be why I like Scott Pilgrim a lot. Oh, no, because I've seen it again since because I thought Edgar Wright deserved my money. And I enjoyed it just as much. So it's not necessarily the perspective. But 9 days, Tom Cruise, Cameron Diaz. The trailer looked funny with a bit of action.
Yeah.
And the first half of the film I thought was funny with a bit of action. Quite enjoying it. And then I can't explain why, but after about the halfway point, I just found myself looking at my watch, wondering what was going on, thinking, you've lost me. It's not funny anymore. There's no action. I'm just bored. And
it really would seem to be, if it didn't have Tom Cruise and Cameron Diaz in it, it would be bad throughout.
Oh, it would be a straight
DVD.
It
was carried only by their charisma,
yes,
really.
Yeah. And even Cameron... Well, no, Cameron Diaz wasn't actually too bad, but her character was slightly annoying. She's a little bit too... Except on the couple of occasions when she really isn't. Most of the time, she's just sort of stereotypically slightly ditzy.
And when in the final third they do the whole she's taken some drugs and is on a truth serum type thing, and then drifts through the rest of the film in a kind of a daze. It's kind of a bit of a shark jumping moment.
Well, yes.
A lot of films do that sort of, let's drug them. We can't work out what to do with them in the third act. We'll drug them and then they'll be hilarious.
Well, something else, which is possibly giving... it's not really giving anything away, but there's one device they use, which I thought worked quite well, which is when one of the characters, Cameron Jones, gets knocked out. And then we just see her coming to, or through from her point of view, coming to... And seeing completely disconnected action sequences, sort of, you know, her in a speedboat and her being thrown out of a plane with a parachute, and Tom Cruise saying, "No, I've got you, don't worry." And then she wakes up on a desert island. And I quite like that sequence, but then they did the similar thing a couple more times, and it just starts to look like a budget saving measure.
Yeah.
So, well, we can't afford this, we'll just drug her through
our
it.
Our cast is too expensive.
Exactly.
We're going to have to make cutbacks elsewhere.
Yeah. And so it just seemed a bit lazy. But I think. Well, this relates to Salt, actually, which I'll come to slightly, but the Night and Day trailer looked quite entertaining. And maybe could have gone either way, but it looked quite entertaining. But almost everything in the trailer happens in the first half, with the exception of this bit of a motorbike chase, which is at the end to desperately try and liven it up. Whereas the Salt trailer, almost all of that is in the first half as well, but then because it gets more interesting afterwards.
Then develops, yeah.
Whereas Night and Day doesn't. They just front load the film with all the stuff in the trailer, and then it just grinds to a crawl. And the title makes no sense.
Well, that's the other thing. Vaguely, there's a hint that he's up. Tom Cruise's name in reality.
Yeah,
is
sort of meet his parents,
and they're called Mr. and Mrs. Knight.
Yeah, and even that's irrelevant, really.
But Cameron Diaz's name isn't Day, apart from the fact that the actress's real name is Spanish for Day. But that's a bit of a leap.
Yeah. And apparently, I think in French, it's just called Night and Day without the K, because I presume that wouldn't work in French as a pun. So it's just called Night and Day, which doesn't make any sense either, because the film doesn't take place over the course of a night and a day. Exactly. It takes place over quite a long time.
Well, the script has had about, I think it's had six different writers doing it.
Oh, really?
It started off as a spec script for a brand new writer, sent it off to a studio. Someone else then rewrote it. Someone else rewrote it. Someone else then had some action sequence. Someone else made it a bit more of a comedy. Someone made it a bit lighter. It changed title at all these different stages. Yeah. And I think probably originally, maybe there might have been some mention of him being called Night, her being called Day. It happened.
No, I think the title was going to be something else entirely. And then they changed it to Night and Day.
I don't know why. I mean, somewhere in the process, it just got lost.
Yeah.
And as did every sense of charm and decency and fun about the film, really.
No, that's the trouble. The first half is fun. And so I was sort of settling in and thinking, I'm kind of enjoying this, actually. It's not as bad as I thought. And then as time went on, now it's exactly as bad as I thought.
And there's a lot of sequences of Cameron Diaz blacking out, which kind of sort of work for a bit. It's kind of like seeing... I find it's like watching a Bond film from the Bond girl's perspective.
That's true.
Because it's all mostly from her point of view, and he comes drifting just out of her life for a few days. And so then she sort of passes out due to a big action sequence or whatever. And then he takes her across the world to some desert island. And it's all very, in a Bond film, suddenly you'd have dramatic music and planes flying in and then all that sort of thing. But because they're doing it from her perspective, she sort of just comes round and then there's a blue sky and then she passes out again and then there's a mountain top and passes out. So you kind of... It's a very much cheaper way of doing it, really. They don't have to go to these places. They just go, camera up, and now we're in Bermuda. So it looked a bit kind of cheap in that sense.
Was there a reason for that? Did it,
I think they're just trying to do something a bit different. And
so it wasn't like a plot twist or anything like that? Like, when you were asleep, this all happened?
Well, no, it's kind of saying that over the course of a day, he's taken her from there to there.
Montage.
Exactly. A little bit of that.
Okay.
A little bit of that.
Oh, well, I'm a bit disappointed because I kind of wanted to see that, but now
I think it's worth watching maybe a rental or on TV, yeah. Tom Cruise and Cameron Diaz are good in it, and Tom Cruise especially showing good comic flair, which he's always had, but
he's
isn't
always
that
been
used
showing
that much.
It a bit. He's been showing it increasingly, hasn't he, I think?
Well, apparently, we'll come to Salt in a sec, but he was, I think, if I'm remembering rightly, he was originally going to be in Salt, and then left it to do Night and Day, because he wanted to do something a bit lighter.
Bizarrely.
Yeah.
Well, it's because he said Salt was a bit too like Mission Impossible for,
that's
for
true.
His liking,
yeah.
Which is a fair point, but it would have been a better film.
Well, yes.
It's quite similar, I suppose, actually.
Should we look at some of the banteries have said about
Night
and Day? Go on, then.
Review to a Kill, Night and Day, toss of the highest standard, awful mess. Tell it like it is, Review.
I think it's slightly harsh, but I can see where he's coming from. Sean Jakes.
Yeah.
Saying, it doesn't tell the whole story, the blackouts are ridiculous. More love than action, 3 out of 5.
Yeah.
3 out of 5 is still quite high from the sound of things.
Well, no, I can sort of see his point because it's very average, but only because the first half is quite good and the second half really isn't. So it levels out
Kazwiz, I presume the name is, basically just says Night and Day could have been a bit better if they threw the budget into the crapper.
Well, I think I can sort of relate. There was the problem people have said in the past in that comedy shouldn't have a high budget.
That's true.
And because the comedy quotient of this is relatively high, the budget then undermines it a bit. We've also got Tony Dodson saying, I love Night and Day. Feel good action movie in great locations. I walked out, as did my sister and daughter. We all said, we want to buy it when it comes out on DVD. Guess there's no accounting for taste.
Oh, there's one person.
So clearly differences of opinion. Yeah, so Night and Day, very average action-y thing, but Salt, for me anyway, far better action-y action thing.
Should have done it.
Well, exactly.
They should have swapped roles and they had Angelina Jolie.
And Cameron
and
Diaz.
Cameron Diaz.
Hey, now we've got a film. Now we've got a film I'm willing to watch.
Day and Day, come on.
Oh, dear.
Anyway, while we dwell on that for a brief moment, let's have a quick thing on Salt.
And there's the Angelina Jolie spy thriller with her being... interviewing a defector comes over and he says, I want to warn you about a spy who is going to try and kill the Russian president. And her name is Evelyn Salt. My name's Evelyn Salt. Then you are the spy. And she goes on the run. Well, actually, I was quite pleased because in the trailer it makes it look like he says that you're a Russian spy, and she immediately bombs out the door and goes on the run. Yeah. Which you think,
yeah, hang on.
And in the film, actually, they'll go out, you know, everyone goes, whoa, what's all that about? I don't know. Well, just sit down here while we sort it out, and then it'll.
Nice job, everyone sort of goes, that's a bit awkward, wasn't it?
Exactly. What was he thinking? Tea. Yeah, but it's kind of an old school. It's kind of a Cold War thriller.
Well, it seems
with a modern bent.
It seems kind of out of time, really. In that it wants Russia and America to be, you know, warring again.
Yes.
But what's really handy for them is, well, they'd already made the film. It's about to come out, and suddenly there's Russian spy ring uncovered in America. But it did mean that I couldn't help watching the film when they sort of, you know, oh, there's all these undercover Russian spies in America, and they're all geniuses, and they're all going to suddenly crack the system and kill the president. And we thought, yeah, but in reality, they're all a bit rubbish. Because they all did this sort of...
They all got caught. They've been watched by the FBI for years.
I know. The real ones are a bit crap. These dead letter drops that no one really does anymore.
Well, yes.
All the neighbours going, they're a bit weird. Who's that? The Russian spies next door.
Yeah.
Oh, them again.
Well, I think that's a potential film title. Spies next door.
Very true, yeah.
But isn't that part of the point with this film, is that they go, this is the idea, and they go, nah, that can't be true, that can't happen.
And also, I mean, a bit like The Sum of All Fears, like, it's not Russia versus America, it's kind of Russian hardliners who want to go back to the old days, who are trying to change the system from within. But it ends up with Angelina Jolie on the run, trying to clear a name, or is she? And is she actually a spy, or isn't she? And that, for me, is where a lot of the interest lay, because I thought, having seen the trailer, I thought, oh, for now, she's on the run, trying to clear a name, revenge spy thing, and that's it. But without going into too much detail, there's more to it than that. And so it goes, not twists, but just in more interesting ways.
Well, I didn't see it all coming, which is quite nice. I quite like it when...
I sort of saw the option, because you know, if you're watching a film, you think, oh, it could go that way, could go that way, could go that way. And it was one of those, but you're not sure...
And for a good chunk of the film, I found they kept us in the dark, really, which is unusual, particularly in a summer blockbuster action film, to actually sort of take a bit of a leap of faith that the audience will go with you on it.
Yes.
And we're there going, okay, we don't quite know. Normally, we know what our protagonist is doing and why.
Yes.
And if we don't, there's maybe half a scene where, like, John McClane will pull the wool over our eyes and will think he's doing one thing, but, he's actually setting up the next stunt for the next thing. But it's very rare that happens for a good 20 minutes.
And I like it because it seems to have fallen out of favour. I'm sure it happened a lot in older film. You just have no idea what's going on. Yeah. And then, Ocean's 11 in a really... abstract sort of way. It all ends in, oh, this is what happens.
You kind of have faith that you are going to find out.
Exactly.
And
you settle it and just enjoy the ride. Enjoy not knowing.
They do say rather be bored, confused for an hour than be bored for a minute.
Yeah.
And I think that's true.
Yeah. Mm. And this is so, yeah, very, it's one point especially where she does something and you think, all right. Then you kind of know still, you know, I'm fairly sure we haven't just seen what we think we've seen, but yeah, you're still not sure which direction it's going. So it
that
keeps
nicely
it
nicely vague.
Well, yeah, I know. Well,
what?
But basically, yeah, you think she's done something, but has she? I found myself thinking, well, that clearly hasn't happened, but it might have done, and I really can't call it either way.
I listened back to our previous episode of the A Team.
Oh yes.
And there's a nicely I don't mean to put you on the spot here. But there's a nicely similar bit where you say, oh, there's this lovely bit. I can't tell you what happens, but there's one bit, and you think what's happened is one thing is the thing that's happened. And then the next thing happens, and then you think, that's good.
Really?
And then another thing happens,
that's
the thing that happens.
Yes.
I'm going, wow, well, I'm sure that made perfect sense.
Yeah, I know.
Anyone who's seen it,
describing it now about the 80s, I'm thinking, oh, I know which
bit.
I don't know. Oh, yes. I've seen the film.
Insult, there is one specific plot point where you think, oh, wasn't expecting that. But
I think one week we should review a film just saying, well, something happens.
Yeah.
And then nothing happens.
It's got that person in it.
But then something happens.
And then the real thing happens, and you realise what happened didn't happen.
And then credits roll.
Yeah.
Really? I'm giving away the credits. Should have just said something happens on the screen. Involving words.
After ruining the end of The Usual Suspects for you, 15 years on, I'm now loath to ever say anything, otherwise you berate me for it.
Let's give them more than a month. To get a chance to see it. But, you know, this film, it was great to see a female action hero.
Yeah, and a believer. And also, I think...
Oh, hang on. You're going to say very believable.
No, I was actually going to say, I'm not sure who else could have pulled it off.
That's true.
In Angelina Jolie, I think it's good casting to stop it.
What?
Hey!
Oh, dear. I apologise for the filth. Because I think Angelina Jolie is... works well in that role. And like in Tomb Raider, I mean, the Tomb Raider films aren't great, but at no point were you sort of thinking, oh, she's putting it on. Whereas like Cameron Diaz in Night and Day, you know, isn't a believable action heroine. But
the only thing is that she's beautiful, let's face it. Angelina Jolie has got stunning features that work really well, but she's got quite a her frame's interesting. It does look as if she could have snapped on a couple of occasions. And that's not a bad thing, it's because she's not built like a brick outhouse. But, you know, you are there going, well, she clearly would have sustained quite a few injuries.
There's a few moments, to be honest, that are, even though, you know, she looks like she's worked out, and and go, okay, well, you could be caught a top action heroine. But there's, and I've seen it in a few of these films, I think in Night and Day it happens as well, where there's her taking on about eight guys at once who all have machine guns.
Yeah.
And you can just see, she'll dispatch one in one moment, and in the background you see the next one sort of getting ready, and then he goes in, and then she dispatches him, and then in the background there's another getting ready. Well, yeah, and you think each of them just shoot her.
Well, yeah. Yeah, but that's not true of just a female action hero.
Any film, but I particularly noticed it in this one. Partly probably because my sexist brain was looking out for, you know, could she really take on all those guys? And then you start thinking, well, no, but no one could take on all those guys. It's sort of...
I'm also just smirking at a day-to-day reference. Do you think she beat them all off?
Sorry.
Paul started it.
Sean Jacks said that Salt is a bit like a female version of the film Shooter.
That's the Mark Wahlberg sniper film, I think.
I wouldn't know.
Which is all right, actually, as I recall.
Oh, there you are. Yeah. Well, he says 3 out of 5. There you go. Review to a Kill says, better than expected. Jolly, much better than expected.
Tony Dodson said, Salt and the Expendables were good, but won't be buying them. Yeah. That's probably fair enough. I'd like to see Salt again, maybe.
Yeah, I would.
Two of our friends went to see it last night, and both hated it.
Really?
Absolutely hated it. So it was like a sub-born knockoff. Thing is, they also said that the plot made no sense and didn't hang together and had been edited too much. And I genuinely can't see that, but I now want to watch it again, because at the time, I thought it all hung together quite well, and you know, motivations become clear, and you see what...
I thought it was very well hung together.
Well, So... Stop it. It's Paul smirking again.
Apart from
hung.
Well.
Anyway. That's two other opinions of people who just really didn't get it at all. And Jed emails... Are you quite finished?
Nope.
Then Jed emails saying, Salt is definitely watchable, but rarely rises above being just that. It has no edge, no distinction other than Jolie. You could do far worse this summer if you need to kill a couple of hours. In the end, it's fun, and after all, a little salt goes a long way to make a bland meal delicious.
Cooking
pun.
Nice. I love it.
Yeah. I think, I'd actually apply that description more to Night and Day than I would to Salt. Salt I found far more interesting. Whereas Night and Day I thought, well, ultimately, it was irritating, but ultimately watchable. Whereas Salt, I think it was kind of an old school thriller. Yeah. And it was more interesting than various films.
It probably would have actually felt better if the Cold War was still on. I probably would have got a bit more.
I think that's quite good, because that's part of the point. It's like, that can't be happening. Yeah, you know, it's all over with, isn't it?
I think that ends in a Greek chorus.
But if you've got any opinions about Salt or Night and Day or Scott Pilgrim, then let us know at Movie Banter on Twitter or email us podcast@moviebanter.co.uk.
That's right.
And you can share these thoughts.
Which brings us to Desert Island Flicks
for
this week. Mm. So because of Scott Pilgrim versus the Wild, we're thinking best breakup film.
Yes.
Curdly! Also, that was me knocking the mic stand.
Oh, goodness sake.
I know, I'm sorry. I'm a bad man.
Yes. That makes you the worst thing anyone has ever done, ever.
Pretty much.
Yes. So there are various films to choose from. Weirdly, one of the first ones which occurred to me, and it's not necessarily the most obvious choice, but I have a soft spot for it, so I'm going to choose it, is Get Over It.
Oh, okay.
It's sort of a teen comedy teen rom-com with Kirsten Dunst.
Oh, that's right.
And Colin Hanks and Ben someone.
Kingsley?
No, who then played Angel or the Winged Guy in X-Men 3 and has done other stuff as well.
Okay.
And also Martin Short in one of the best cameos/small parts I've ever seen him do anyway. He's very, very funny.
He's a funny man.
And the film itself is really funny, and it's just about, is it Midsummer Night's Dream? It's about them doing a performance of Midsummer Night's Dream.
Yeah.
And I think the film is very loosely based on Midsummer Night's Dream as well.
A
couple of years when they kept making high school films about Shakespeare plays.
But this is really tenuously.
It's too challenging, so let's put it to music.
Exactly. Well, yeah, no, but that's the whole point is, though, is that their production of it is meant to be awful. So, you know, it's not about them putting on a production of it and that's the structure of the film. It's more, you know, we're doing this and our teacher is making it, so it's awful because he thinks he's talented and isn't, which is why Martin Short is so good. And yeah, it's just quite funny and I like it quite a lot. Yeah. So that's my pick.
Good work. Jennifer?
I'm going to go for Swingers. Because I think that, to me, most of the film that's just about trying to get over this one breakup.
I think that's the most apt.
And it's so money.
It's so money. It is so money.
That worked as a catchphrase for about 6 months and then fell out of favour rapidly.
Yeah. Who's the big winner?
Now that still works. Yeah.
I don't know. I'm tempted because there's a few. I mean, Annie Hall, as they say, is technically a breakup film. But then I kind of like the bits about that when it's about them together. So I'm going to. I think instead, I'm going to go with either Morats or Chasing Amy. So, Morats.
Yeah.
Guilty pleasure.
I did watch that quite. Not that guilty. Brilliant pleasure.
Yeah. Innocent, but slightly guilty pleasure.
Well, yes. But I know.
Yeah, it's not as good a film as Annie Hall, I don't think. But
no.
In terms of a film about breakup, just the breakup bits in it are quite funny.
Yes. So. And then they're getting back together as well.
Yeah.
I'm sure I read somewhere that Annie Hall was meant to be almost an entirely different film. It was meant to be a murder mystery, or I think bits of it ended up being in Manhattan Murder Mystery. But when editing it together, they kind of worked out, hang on, and I think Annie Hall herself was meant to be a kind of incidental character.
Right.
And then they had lots of footage, and while editing it together, thought, actually, hang on, this bit all really works, and this bit doesn't, so we'll cut out that and then make it something else. But yes, but I can't remember the specifics, but look up, you know, Annie Hall editing, changing story, and you'll see a sort of spelling out of how, in the editing room, it became something else entirely. Yes, Lady at the Back.
500 Days of Summer as well.
That's
true.
Good thought.
Someone I spoke to up in Edinburgh hated it.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely hated the Final Days of Summer, and I can't see why. So whoever you were, if you're listening, you're wrong.
I'm looking forward to 500 Days of Autumn, the sequel.
It's it's 1,000 Days of Autumn.
Is that right? Yeah. Of course. Double by me.
It's an epic.
Much longer film.
Yes. I think that does us.
Yeah. I think that does. That's enough
kind of
banter.
It's sort of the first half slash.
Yeah, well, we've got next time, it's going to be The Expendables and The Switch and Piranha 3D.
Oh, yes. Three slightly different. Actually, well, Expendables and Piranha kind of work. But, three fairly different films.
Very different films. Yeah.
Cool.
So, yes. So, till then, keep on bantering.
Oh, dear.
Just trying to catch raises.
No, please. just stop.
Keep on moving.
No.
Watch some movies.
You know on the running order where it just said, stop?
Oh, yeah.
I see you always simply say,
okay.
Stop.
Just keep on breathing.
Yes.
And we'll see you next time.
Ta-da.
Bye.
Bye.